Hi, this is Randy, and you're listening to The Beauty Brains for Tuesday, August 5th, 2014. Welcome to the show, Graham, everyone. I'm Randy Schuler, and I'm here with my cohort in chemistry, Perry Romanowski. Hey, Perry.
Hello, Randy. How are you today?
I am great. You know, it's been a busy week here at Beauty Brains headquarters.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've had three interviews with various media outlets this week.
Wow, isn't that cool how that works?
It is cool. You know, we talked last episode or the week before maybe about being recognized as an expert. So it's kind of cool that people do, recognize our expertise. But the first one was a little outfit called Walmart.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, well, they want to profile us in an article for their webpage. So that is
so cool.
Yeah, that's got to be fun. And then second was an interview with Allure magazine about keratin smoothing treatments. You know, do those things really work and what do they do? I think that is one of the product areas that we get the most questions about. People really, you know, they're worried about, are they safe? They don't know if they work. How long do they last? We get lots and lots of questions about that. And then thirdly, and to me the most surprising, was a request from the website Refinery29 to do an interview about the differences between different types of shampoo formulas.
Oh, our good friends over at Refinery29.
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, longtime listeners of the show will know we kind of have this sort of a love-hate relationship with them because they the love part is they put out a lot of great content, one of the most prolific sites I think out there,
and with great headlines. Really.
They do have great headlines, very magnetic headlines, and sure. You know, always I never fail to find something interesting almost every single day from the news feed from Refinery29. The hate part is, let's just say sometimes the articles are less than thoroughly researched, and I've ranted about this in previous episodes, but I've left comments on the website when I've seen inaccuracies, particularly when they, you know, were safety related. And, you know, I reached out to them and said, hey, if you ever need somebody to help fact check your articles or whatever, I'd love to help. Well, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but sure enough, one of their writers got in touch with us asking us to do just that. So you can look for that on their website coming soon. I'll certainly add a link when we get that.
And if anybody out there has media connections or has some questions about beauty products, so we're always happy.
We'd love to help.
Sure. So remember that first one first media mention we got was like the New York Times.
Oh, God,
I just remember our web traffic that day was just ridiculous.
Back in the good old days.
Ah, yes.
So anyway, you know, I thought we would do something special in honor of this Refinery29 interview.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Today, we're going to play a special Refinery29 version of Beauty Science or Bullshit.
Oh, boy.
Try and temper your enthusiasm a little. So here's the deal for today, all right?
All right. How's today different?
You're going to tell me which one of these is not a real Refinery29 headline.
Okay.
And just to make things even more interesting, the theme today is sun protection.
These are
three sun protection stories that appeared on Refinery29. At least two of them did. And one of them I made up. So you have to pick the one that is bogus. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, here we go. Go ahead.
So there's going to be three of them.
There will be three.
All right.
Two are actual Refinery29 headlines. One is made up.
All right, I'm ready now.
Okay, number one. Your hair products are causing your scalp sunburn. Number two. Text your way to sunburn-free skin. And number three, chemical-free sunscreens for a health-conscious summer. So there you go.
All right. Well, here we go. Before I answer this, or even do any you know, highly intellectual analysis. Let's see what random chance says is the answer. I've shuffled three cards, and I'm just going to pick one, and according to random chance, the first headline is bogus, so hair causes scalp sunburn.
Okay.
Okay, so that's random chance. Now, as far as I'm going, your hair products are causing your scalp sunburn, so I could see Refinery 29 thinking that there's a silicone in there, and it's going to intensify the sun, mm-hmm. and going to... I could see that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a text to sunburn free summer.
No, so, text your way to sunburn free skin is the headline.
So using text messaging can somehow give you sunscreen. I don't even know what that means. Then the final one is the chemical-free sunscreen review. What was that? So,
chemical-free sunscreens for a health-conscious summer.
Ah. Now, I have to say that I could see any of these three being there. So nicely done. I'm going to buy the text one. This is online stuff. I don't even know what it means, but okay. I'm going to buy that one. Mm-hmm. So now it's a question. Of course, the chemical-free sunscreen thing is exactly the kind of thing you'd see in Refinery 29, even though there is no such thing as chemical-free.
Yep.
But I think maybe you would think that you would make that up, too. The hair causes the scalp. Hair products causing the scalp. That one sounds a little too scientific to me, which seems like you probably made that first one up.
It's only a 30-minute show.
So I'm going to say, okay, the first one is the fake.
First one, okay, so you're actually, Chance and you agree on this one then.
I'm going to agree with Chance.
All right, let's see what we've got here. So you think that chemical-free sunscreens for a health-conscious summer is a real Refinery 29 headline, and indeed it is. The spin here, actually there's no spin, it's the same crap they always put out, right? They're saying, you know, people want sunscreens to be chemical free. And they said, you know, whether you like it or not, sunscreens contain some pretty nasty ingredients, and you know, plenty of us would like to keep those chemicals on the shelf and away from our bodies. So they're pitching, you know, the sunblock, the mineral sunscreens, which are perfectly fine, but that doesn't mean all sunscreens are bad because they are quote unquote chemicals, because again, everything is a chemical. So, yes, that was a real headline.
Exactly.
All right. So, second, let's look at hair products causing scalp sunburn. That is a true headline. So, this one was, they quoted a dermatologist, a Dr. Doran, I believe. And the headline, it's true. It's a little misleading. So, this doctor says the number one culprit behind scalp burn is anything that makes your hair sort of clump together and expose your scalp. So there's, you know, pomades, gels, pastes, anything that exposes more of your scalp to the sun is going to cause more scalp burn. Well, that's really just saying how you style your hair causes scalp burn, right? If you parted your hair down the middle and exposed, you know, a line of scalp, it would sunburn. So it has nothing to do with the product. Right. Right. There's no interaction, like you said, oh, maybe the silicone intensifies. No, it has nothing to do with that. It's how you style your hair. So not really a very on-target headline, but certainly attracted my attention. So that means that the third headline, text your way to sunburn-free skin, was made up, but it is based on an article that said that talked about a text message-based management program for diabetics. So apparently, people in this study improved their glycemic index by receiving texts about, you know, nutrition tips, reminding them to take their medication, asking them to check their blood sugar. So they had a text message program, and sure enough, the people who got those text messages did better in controlling their diabetes. But obviously, that has nothing to do with sunburn-free skin.
It doesn't. In retrospect, it does sound even more completely. I, Although I imagine in my head that there's some text message that would send you the sunscreen, you know, you need to reapply your sunscreen.
Yeah, I mean, it actually makes total sense, right? Because you could, you know, here's the UV index for today. It's very high. Don't forget to put on sunscreen. 2 hours later, here's a reminder note to put on your sunscreen. So it's not inconceivable, but it was totally made up.
Right. Well, nicely done again.
All right. Boy, I enjoy that game. All right. Let's move on to our next segment. We're going to do one of our famous and wildly popular extended beauty science news episodes today. Yeah.
Excellent. So, enjoy those.
Yeah. Do you want to kick it off?
Sure. Well, did you play the music first?
You're just doing that because I yelled at you last week for not letting me play the music. All right. Here we go. It's time for Beauty Science News.
Hey, Randy, you remember a few shows ago we talked about the microbead plastic buildup in the environment?
Yes, I do.
So our great state of Illinois has recently moved to ban those little plastic beads in facial scrubs. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that before, but the one thing that occurred to me about these things, as I always thought, in formulating them, I always thought these beads were just like a gimmick. Hmm. Like they didn't actually do anything.
Well, they, as I recall, you know, and because we did, you know, have facial scrubs as part of our product portfolio. And sure. Those originally used like, you know, walnut shells, that sort of thing to, you know, scrape away dead skin cells. And then at some point somebody said, well, those things are actually creating tears in your skin. So if you used a softer, rounder bead instead of a walnut shell, it would be better for your skin to exfoliate. So.
Right. Even that first one, did those little particles, did they actually scrape, do the micro scraping? I mean, I looked into this, right? I looked mm-hmm. in the Journal of Society of Cosmetic Chemists and Google Scholar.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything that compared a scrub with and without these particles to demonstrate that there was extra exfoliation going on.
Well, that's interesting, because you could say that just the act of washing your face will give you some degree of exfoliation.
Right, and I would think, like, if say you took a washcloth, so a regular cleanser and a washcloth mm-hmm. versus one of those cleansers
right.
with a washcloth, would you see a difference?
Well, the key is, I think, the washcloth. You're right. Just if you just wash your face with your hands, I could see mm-hmm. that the coefficient of friction isn't high enough to, you know, slough off any loose skin cells. But with a washcloth, I would imagine that would do just about as good of a job. Or you could spend, you know, $300 on a Clarisonic.
Right. Which is a fine product, by the way.
Wait, are they sponsoring the show now? I'm sorry. I take it back.
Not yet. So anyway, this whole banning of microbeads, it's... You know, I don't think it's really a problem because the beads weren't doing anything anyway from my vantage point.
Much ado about nothing.
Yes.
You know, speaking about bans, I saw an article about titanium dioxide not being banned, but being products pulled off the shelf with titanium dioxide. This was this was on Cosmetics Design. And apparently, there's another non-governmental organization called the Public Interest Alliance. I'm not familiar with this one. Are you?
I had not heard about them until I saw this story.
Yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on them if they're this active in the personal care product space. But so they filed a lawsuit in California, asking companies to remove or relabel their products, you know, remove titanium dioxide or relabel the product to indicate it had a dangerous ingredient in it. Because apparently there's some link between inhaling titanium dioxide powder and, mm-hmm. you know, the growth of tumors. So what was baffling to me about this particular case was this, you know, the PIA, the Public Interest Alliance, they admit that there is no evidence that this chemical compound is a risk to human health. So they're saying, we're not saying that these powder cosmetic products are necessarily unsafe. We just want to raise awareness that the scientific-based link between the inhalation of titanium dioxide powder and tumor growth requires more study, which is perfectly legitimate. If that's your point, let's raise the flag and say, hey, take a look at this. Why would you have products pulled off the shelf or relabeled?
I mean, they ultimately didn't make that happen, though, right? I mean, it was these companies were just afraid of the bad press.
Well, no, this was the result to settle a lawsuit.
Oh, that's so. You're right. You're right. Actually, I think titanium dioxide, was that on Proposition 65, California's list?
You know, I'm not sure if it was. I believe it was only for the inhalation. Because there's really two main reasons to use that in a formula, right? One would be in a powdered or liquid cosmetic as a, you know, like an opacifier, right? Like in a foundation.
Right, the colorant, yeah.
Right. Or as a sunscreen active. Now,
right.
there aren't really powdered sunscreens. There are powdered makeup that contains sunscreens, but powder is not really a form of sunscreen. So are they saying that it's only a problem in a powdered product? Because there you could inhale it, right? I mean, at least conceivably, but you're not going to inhale a lotion sunscreen. So to me, it's just seemed kind of mixed up.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about this is that it wasn't the big brands, right? I mean, like the big companies, L'Oreal and P&G, you know, weren't part of this. So why not?
Well, it was funny because the quote from the article said that they recalled this as five leading skincare brands. But then when you read the brands, it's Dermaquest, Dr. Hoshaka, Melaleuca, and Murad. So I'm not quite sure how any of those are leading brands. But, you know, I guess maybe in the premium sector they are. I don't know.
Yeah, they're not. They're not in the mass market.
Yeah. At least. So anyway, I mean, we certainly don't agree. We certainly don't disagree that more testing should be done if that's prudent. But there's no need to be pulling products off the shelf for this.
Hmm. Well, that happens. All right, I got another story here. Actually, it's more of just a thing that I found out. I was reading a discussion about someone asked a question in this forum I was reading. They said, "Why do you?" You know, why do you only get acne on your face and not all over your body? And I, you know, the truth is you can get it all over your body, but you certainly don't get acne like on your hands, right?
Not usually. I mean, there's, you know, backne.
Right. There's backne and you can get it on, there's assne, right? Or buttne, or what do we call it? But there are spots that you don't get it. And so the whole discussion was about that, which was very interesting. But what came up was somebody asked the question, well, do other animals get acne?
Oh.
And it turns out cats get acne.
Catney?
It's feline acne. And it's the formation of blackheads. And then inflammation is usually around the cat's chin. So I just found it very interesting that cats can also get acne.
And did they, I mean, did they talk about the mechanism and like why wouldn't dogs get it as well? Is there something?
Yeah. Well, they say that the main causes of feline acne are that it's a hyperactive sebaceous glands. And then if the cat has kind of poor hygiene or the cat is, it usually happens to cats somewhere around the ages of 2 to 4 and it's due to hormonal effects.
Hmm.
Or it could have a reaction to some sort of medicine maybe the cat is on or even stress.
Do they recommend washing your cat's face with microbeads? Would that help?
they do not recommend microbeads. It's more washing the area with a warm compress is really what they say. And if it gets really bad, take them to a vet. But there you go. Humans are not the only ones who suffer from acne.
Wow. You said you said anxiety was one of the potential causes?
Yes, yeah, stress.
Stress? So here's another article about anxiety.
There you go. You know, nice transition.
I just thought of that too. You know, I don't go outside very often, but you know, when I do need need to go shopping, I'm fortunate enough to live close enough to one of the largest indoor malls in the country, I believe, you know, Woodfield Mall here in Schaumburg.
Sure, sure.
You know, so that's the good news. I can go do my shopping and still be indoors. Now, the bad news is I almost cannot bring myself to walk through one whole section of the mall. Do you know why?
No. What's the reason?
It's because of the overwhelming fragrance stench that comes out of the Abercrombie & Fitch store. Now, I always thought this was just me, but but here's a news story that says researchers suggest Abercrombie's scent gives shoppers anxiety. So apparently, maybe this is one of their particular fragrances. I'm not familiar with their brands, but they have a fragrance called Fierce. And I love the description of the bottle. I guess they must have a display in the stores. They describe it as a mysteriously disembodied torso of a svelte warrior. And, you know, I know you're not very suburban, but if you were ever to go in one of these stores or even near one of these stores, they just pump fragrance out. And so you don't even have to go inside. Just walking by, you can smell the store. So apparently...
Does it come like out of speakers or something?
I don't know. Some sort of, you know, compressed air device, I suppose. And so apparently they talked to a researcher, this Professor Bianca Groman, who talked about how the scents in the store are affecting human anxiety. And now I don't know if I buy this, but they're saying that this scent is composed, it's a binary scent, where they have these open smells, like the smell of, you know, things outdoors, right? The seashore, apple fields, whatever. And then enclosed scents, like firewood or buttered popcorn. And according to this researcher, as long as the scent complements the space, it'll make you feel less anxious. So if you're inside and you have an inside fragrance note, you'll feel good. But if you're in, if you mismatch the scent, you know, you're in you're in a dark closed store, but you're smelling an open air scent, that will make you feel trapped and claustrophobic. And that's the source of the anxiety. So I don't know if I buy the reasoning behind it, but I absolutely agree it's a problem. And apparently, Abercrombie has decided they're going to reduce store fragrance by 25%.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how that affects things.
I can't wait to go back and smell my way through the mall.
You know what other? There was another store like that that I just can't walk by, and that is Lush.
Oh,
have you ever been by a Lush store?
I have, and there's actually one in the same mall, but you know what? If you don't go in the store, you don't smell it.
Oh, because they have Lush stores in the city here, and just on the sidewalk, walking by, you just get pummeled by this odor, which is, like, sickeningly sweet. Well, I mean, it's just they have their products just displayed out, and so it's the cacophony of odor scents just blows me away. I have a hard time walking by
there. It's the mismatch of the binary fragrance code. That's the problem.
Indeed. Maybe it's just we're not the target market, right?
That could be, too.
It keeps us out. You know, speaking of target market or marketing, did you see this new thing from Neutrogena?
What's that?
You know, everyone's encouraged to use sunscreen, right?
Yeah.
Especially now during the summer.
And especially if you read Refinery 29.
Exactly. And the chemical-free version. A lot of people figure they'll look outside and they'll see, it's a cloudy day. The sun's not out. I don't need sunscreen. And in fact, you can still get UVA rays and UVB damage, and you can actually get sun damage on a cloudy day. So Neutrogena's genius marketing idea is to now offer consumers a cloud screen.
It's Neutrogenius.
You were working on that one all day, weren't you? Yeah, so this is a product which is essentially a sunscreen, but it says cloud screen on it. So they're taking a little heat about whether this is a marketing ploy or maybe it's a really good awareness kind of campaign. But essentially the products are just they're sunscreens, but they call them cloud screens.
I'm sorry. I was busy preparing a website to sell my own snow screen and rain screen. I stopped listening there for a minute. I'm sorry.
Anything that gets people to use more sunscreen, I suppose, is a good thing. And we'll see if this is just a gimmick or if this actually sticks. It would be interesting.
I mean, I don't think it's quite as ridiculous as it could be. I mean. People, I mean, we harp all the time. People don't wear enough sunscreen. And, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way to go about it. But, you know, I mean, they should be trying to increase awareness. Now, you know, and, you know, they're a commercial business. Yeah, they're going to make a buck by selling sunscreens. But again, it does provide a valuable service. It's not like this is, you know, a new perfume or something they're selling. I mean,
yeah. And people don't really behave rationally. They see the word sunscreen and they think, well, it has to be sun. So,
yeah.
You know, so cloud screen if it's cloudy. So,
yeah. Well, it's certainly clever. You'll know they're successful if other companies copy them, right? If we see more of these products coming out.
Yeah.
So,
although I suspect this probably wasn't an original idea from them. They might have saw some small company doing it and said, hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. You know, that's a good segue into the next story, speaking of companies in the industry. So for me, you know, one of the most eye-opening things about being in this industry was realizing how many brands are owned by the same master company or the same parent company. And, you know, we used to cover this a lot. And, you know, I still think it's interesting to track. So when I see a new acquisition, I'll always add it to my mind map of who owns what brand. You know, we used to do a who's who in the cosmetic industry kind of thing.
Right.
But I just saw another one this week, so that's why it came to mind. So, you know that everybody knows this, right? That salon hair care brands, they're, you know, fiercely independent. They use their own little, you know, cutting edge technology. They're the little guy going up against the big Goliath, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the story.
Yeah, right. Well, three salon brands were just gobbled up by the German surfactant company Henkel.
Ah.
So, first, before I tell you which brands that was, do you happen to know which U.S. brands? Because Henkel's a German company. They own, you know, dozens of brands around the world. But in the U.S., do you know what brands they're known for?
They are known for Dial.
Very good. Yep.
And they also, in the hair area, they have Got to Be.
Yes, very good.
Used to.
Yep.
And they had the famous gel, Depp, right?
Yep. They know, and you'll see it more on the salon side, but they also own Schwarzkopf. Which is
right,
has got some penetration here in the U.S. And then, and this one I didn't remember at least, but in antiperspirants and deodorants, they're the owners of Right Guard.
Oh.
I
think they also own Big Sexy Hair, I think.
Well, here are the three brands they just bought.
And
this was in a $370 million deal. The first one was Alterna, which is known for, like, doing their, you know, caviar anti-aging line. And I think they have a hemp line of products, too, under Alterna. At least they used to.
Sure. You can get it at Ulta.
Yep. Yeah, these are all very Ulta-ish sort of brands. And then Kenra, which I'm vaguely familiar with. I couldn't quote any of their products. And then Sexy Hair was the third brand.
Oh, okay.
So,
that's where I got that. Yeah.
So, you know, now, you know, it'll be interesting to see if you know, they let them stand alone as you know, separate and distinct business units, or whether they will begin to fold some of their corporate formulas into the brand, which, you know, tends to happen in cases like this, but we'll see.
You know, I have to say about Henkel, I remember we were doing, it was some sort of brainstorming analysis and when we was at Alberto Culver, and it occurred to me that Henkel should have bought Alberto Culver.
How's that?
Because Henkel was really big in, they have a significant skincare area. And then around the world, Henkel is as big as P&G and Unilever in some markets, right?
Right.
But in the United States, they had the styling. Depp, while it doesn't make a huge profit, it was a big styling brand, sells a lot of units. But they had nothing in shampoo and conditioner.
Hmm.
And I thought Henkel could have bought Alberto Culver. That would have gave them a positioning in shampoo and conditioner. But turns out they did not pull that trigger. Unilever did instead.
Thank you. We are the business brains now. So
we are. Well, speaking of brains, you know that little notion that blondes are a bit more ditzy?
Be careful where you go with this one, but all right, I'm with you.
No, they aren't. There is no evidence of that. It's just that was my transition to this story about blondes.
Okay.
Because my other transition, I don't think you'd like as much. what What state does Barbie's boyfriend live in? Kentucky.
No, that's not bad.
All right. Here's a story about the genetics of blonde hair. And the thing that I found most interesting about it is blonde hair is actually just a single mutation on a gene. And it's a thing that, well, in the biochemistry world, we call them single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs. And you know how humans are, you know, every human is, I mean, we're genetically different, but we have all the same kind of genes, right? Mm-hmm. And we have pretty much the same genetic makeup. But the thing that makes us individuals are these things called single nucleotide polymorphism. So every gene has you have the gene, but you have maybe a mutation or a different letter on the single one. But in what they found for people who develop blonde hair, the gene that was related to blondness was the result of just one single nucleotide polymorphism. And it was just a single mutation.
I can hear all our listeners just catch their breath at that right now. They're blown away.
So it turns out, I think in the future what could happen here is once we get like genetic treatments, you could genetically change yourself into a blonde by having just this mutation on this one gene.
Oh.
So there, how about that for blowing away?
I retract my sarcasm. And there was no link to intelligence on this one.
And there's no evidence that hair color is related to intelligence at all.
Do you remember, I don't know, it comes up every couple of years, I think, but there's an internet meme that goes around about blondes becoming extinct. Do you remember that one?
I recall that, yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while, and I forget the exact rationale, but it had something to do with women dyeing their hair blonde and therefore the gene wasn't being passed on or something. I don't know, it was ridiculous, but anyway, it sort of reminded me of that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't think there's any concern about blondes going extinct. You know, it's interesting to see that a lot of our, you know, beauty characteristics are controlled by just a single nucleotide of DNA.
Well, as you said earlier, it's all genetics. So, you know, as usual, there are way more beauty science stories we've seen this week than we have time to discuss today, because it's the end of the show.
Oh, already?
Yeah, wow. That's all right. We'll come back.
That was fun.
We'll come back. We'll do it again. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. That's good. We are coming up on the big 44th episode, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I know I've gotten a lot of comments and questions from our listeners. What have we got planned? What's going on? That's a big episode because, as our regular listeners know, 44 is Perry's favorite number.
Right, yeah, 44. Yeah, you know, it's a palindrome, right? 4 and 4. You turn that right around, 4, 4.
No wonder it's your favorite.
You turn it upside down. Remember 2002, the year of the palindrome, when we tried to come up with our own palindrome?
I do. I remember my favorite one, my favorite palindrome that we came up with was poop time, I emit poop.
that was a wonderful one. Boy, it still hasn't been topped. You know what else hasn't been topped is our supply of books. You know our new book, It's Okay to Have Lead in Your Lipstick.
The one with the tagline and answers to other beauty questions you're dying to know.
Yeah, sure. And so you can get a copy of that book by going to our website or Amazon or any other online bookseller. But we encourage you, if you like the stuff you hear on the show today, we've got lots of questions and answers in that book.
Excellent. And also don't forget to follow us on social media. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, pronounced correctly, all those good places.
Did you just say Pinterest?
No, I said it right that time.
God, you're so millennial.
I don't even know what that means, Perry.
I don't know either. Totes my goats. Yeah, that's what people say these days.
No, people don't say that.
Oh, they do.
All right, fine. Well, you know what I'm going to say?
Sayonara?
That's right. I'm going to say goodbye, and I'm going to remind our listeners to be brainy about their beauty.
All right.